This is Bob Fetrakis with The Other Side of the News, brought to you by thefreepress.org. WCRS Community Radio 98.3 and 102.1.
Hi, this is Bob Fetrakis. I'm here with prisoner advocate and former prisoner himself, Dan Cahill. Dan, welcome to The Other Side of the News.
Thanks for having me, Bob.
And you've been presenting The Other Side of the News, which is the slogan of the Columbus Free Press, freepress.org. Check us out. You were telling me before we went on the air, you actually wrote for the Free Press when?
1976. I believe it was September 1976.
And how'd that work out for you?
They sent me to Lucasville.
Well, you can tell they believe in free speech in the Ohio prison system. What got you sent to Lucasville there, Dan?
They said that I was helping to organize sit-down strikes at the old Ohio penitentiary.
Well, I know you, Dan. You might have been. Were you helping to organize it or not?
It worked.
It worked. And what are they? What are you helping to organize now? You got an event coming up?
Yes, it's April 7th from 1 to 3 at the State Capitol Building, Broad and High, the Solidarity Rally, and then we'll follow it with a march from the State Capitol Building down West Broad Street to the Ohio Department of Rehabilitation and Correction Office.
April 7th, what day is that?
That's Saturday. Saturday?
Saturday, April 7th, actually. That would be this Saturday. You'll be hearing this, I believe, on Monday. But Saturday, April 7th. What sort of issues do you envision being raised at this rally?
The one is the Lucasville Five, the five prisoners that were set up after the Lucasville riot for their roles in the uprising down at Lucasville in 1993 on Easter Sunday in 1993, and it's a anti-death penalty issue and the collateral sanctions on parolees or ex-felons.
Well, let's look in the detail. We'll deal with each of these issues separately. What do you mean collateral sanctions on prisoners or ex-prisoners?
Collateral sanctions are all the things that hinder our employment, housing, like not being able to get a vendor's license or not being a licensed electrician or a plumber, not being allowed to rent certain apartments and houses because of our record, our past convictions. Those would all be collateral sanctions. Also too, like losing our driver's license for certain offenses, that's a collateral sanction.
Well, what kind of offense would you lose your driver's license over?
Any kind of drug offense at all. Any kind of drug offense, it's an automatic suspension of your license. I think it's for at least 6 months first time, and then it can go up to like 2 years, I think. And
I don't see how that helps you keep a job if you don't have a driver's license.
Well, not at all. You're right. Doesn't it? A lot of guys have lost jobs because they haven't been able to get to work, having lost their license for minor drug offenses.
So if you go to prison, come out, reform yourself, you can get a license as an electrician?
No. Not in Ohio. Never in your life. No, they don't really forgive here in Ohio.
What other kinds of things do they say you can't do?
Well, you can't have any kind of business license, no transient vendor's license, okay. No business license.
So you can't have business licenses, and you can't have many professional licenses. And they're going to pull your driver's license for minor misdemeanors. Where does that leave you?
Well, pretty much you'd be unemployed or having to take a bus to and from work, and if your job isn't on a bus line, then you pretty much lose your job.
Now, what are you asking the state to do?
Well, we want legislation that would actually remove the sanctions, the collateral sanctions, and that bar us from employment and certain licenses. Also, too, there's a movement called Ban the Box, where when you fill out a job application, there's a box that asks if you've ever been convicted of a felony, and we'd like to have that removed from job applications. Some cities have already done it, and some other states have already done it too, but not Ohio yet.
Now, aren't there some people that will suggest, well, there's certain offenses for certain jobs you would have to still disclose?
Yeah. I'm sure there would be some offenses and some jobs but that would come afterwards, and after you've done your job application, they would inquire into that, you know, to see if...
Oh, so it wouldn't be a mandatory, they hand you the form, and they automatically want to know that
right. You're
former felon.
Right, right.
Now, how would you get around, it appears that many of those people would, what if they just Googled you, what could you do then?
A lot of it won't come up on Google anymore if you're off parole. If you're still on parole, it will come up on the Department of Rehabilitation and Correction offender website. It'll still come up if you're still on parole or a post-release control.
All right, and you also, prior to coming on the air, we talked a little about old law prisoners. What do you mean by that?
We had two different types of sentences in Ohio. One's called an indeterminate sentence, which is like 5 to 15 years. That's an indeterminate sentence. And then we have flat time sentences, which is just a simple flat time, like, say, 8 years or 9 years or whatever. That's a determinate sentence. When they did it here in Ohio, the parole board began to apply what's called truth in sentencing, which is actually supposed to be applied to the minimum. Well, they applied it to the maximum of the sentence and required 85% of the sentence. So now we have roughly 3,500 prisoners that are still being held in prison that are actually eligible for parole and would have gotten out years ago the way it was back then, like, say, 15, 20 years ago. They had already been out.
So a judge would sentence you to this 5 to 15. So instead of saying you have to do at least 5, they said you have to do 85% of 15?
Right. That's true. That is true. We polled the judges way back in the late 90s, and my judge, sentencing judge, found out that I had just over 7 years on a 5 to 15, and he expected I would do somewhere like 3.5 or 4, you know, maybe 4.5 years, and he was stunned to find out that I was still in prison, and it was 7 years, and, you know, might still do more time. So, the judges really had no idea that it was going to turn out like that.
Wasn't there a problem with people going in, even with a 5 to 15, and actually doing more time because of offenses inside the prison? Has that been sorted out?
Well, yeah, but that's why they had indeterminate sentences, was if you were a troublemaker in prison or you got in a lot of trouble, then
you would do the 15?
Or more of it. You would do more of the than the minimum. You might do an extra 4 or 5 years or two or three years. And actually, when they first started the parole board here in Ohio, they were referred to as prisoner advocates, which seems kind of ironic now. And their job was to actually get people out of prison. And after all these years later, they've turned it all the way around to where now they're not letting people out. You know, they think their job is to keep them in there. And the truth of sentencing was never to be applied to the max. It was always to be applied to the minimum. But somewhere, and we think the order came down, an executive order from the governor's office, and to the parole board telling them they wanted the 85% of the sentences to be applied to the minimum and not the max. I mean, to the max and not the minimum.
So you've got the situation not only in Ohio but the United States. We got 4% of the world's population in the United States and about 25% of all the prisoners on Earth, and we're paying anywhere from $30,000 to $45,000 a year depending upon the state.
And the level of security status that you're being held in, yeah, it can go up even higher if you go to the Supermax, but... where the Lucasville Five are currently being held, four of the five are still held in the Supermax prison.
And now let's shift over to the Lucasville Five. You're saying they should be freed or not killed, or did they all get the death penalty?
All five of them, yes.
Now, one of the charges is that they were sort of like the old Chicago Seven in the after the 68 Chicago riots. Is in part they were prosecuted for who they represented, whether it was the Aryan Brotherhood or Nation of Islam or Black Muslims, is that they appeared to be the leaders of various prison groups, not necessarily, as Staunton Lynn said, the people that actually killed anybody.
Right. Well, one of the prisoners that was actually involved in killing Officer Vallandigham wasn't sentenced to death, and he testified against the other prisoners and was sent to a protective custody private prison out of state. And George Skates wasn't actually sentenced to death for anyone that for the Vallandigham murder. He was sentenced to death for the murder of two other prisoners that other prisoners actually admitted to killing. And then they blamed him and said that he had given the order to kill these prisoners.
So he wasn't charged with killing them as the individual killer, but as somebody who ordered their killing?
Right.
But I thought under Ohio law, under Ohio capital offenses, only the person that did the actual killing, and only one of those could be charged.
Not in Ohio. No, in Ohio you can get killed. They did it with John Byrd.
But they tried to claim that Byrd was the actual killer, even though there was evidence to the contrary.
Yeah, they tried to claim a lot of things on that case.
So you've got this Lucasville 5. Why is it an important issue? Why should the listeners care about the Lucasville 5?
Well, most of the activities during the uprising was actually trying to keep peace in the prison during the riot, and to represent the interest of the prisoners to the state prison system and to legislators and the public. And I don't think they really had that much involvement in a lot of the individual acts of violence that took place during the riot. They were more like a leadership role, and I think they did do a lot of peacekeeping during the riot.
Why do you think the state of Ohio went after him then?
Because they were leaders, and any leader in prison, anybody that is in a leadership position, is considered a threat to security. And they were trying to make examples of them so that anyone in the future would think twice about, you know, stepping forward and getting involved in that role.
Let's talk a little about your experience in prison. Did it prepare you for the outside world?
No, not at all. No, not at all.
Now, if you had power in Ohio today, knowing what you know, what reform measures would you institute?
Well, I would try to abolish prisons as much as possible to... I feel now that the vast majority of prisoners that are actually in prison don't really need to be there.
Would you replace it with some form of community correction restitution, what? This is Bob Fitrakis. You're listening to The Other Side of the News. Community Radio, WCRS 98.3, 102.1. We're talking to Dan Cahill here in the studio, prisoner advocate. Dan, we were sort of trying to see how you would reform or radically restructure the Ohio prison system.
They have a concept that's referred to as a restorative justice. And there's a book out written by Howard Zaire called Changing Lenses. And it's actually not that radical an idea. And it's where you're trying to, like restitution for a crime and community service. And it has a lot to do with actually healing the victims or anyone that's harmed as well as the offender. And it's kind of like a repairing society altogether and not just throwing someone in prison and saying they're done with them, you know.
Now, there's charges that prisoners are simply warehoused and not taught any skills that would allow them to cope once they get out. Essentially, you're allowing them, you're putting them in prison. It's pretty much a authoritarian or totalitarian environment. Then you let them out without any skills, and it's virtually impossible for them to cope without a skill set.
Well, a lot of them are, you're right, a lot of them are going back to prison because they can't get jobs or they don't have the skills necessary. Myself, I did a lot of years, actually a little over 30 years, and the skills that I had didn't really prepare me for finding any employment out here.
How would you change that? Is it the very structure? Is there something about the structure of the system that means once you're caught up in it, you're likely to return to it? You know, the so-called recidivism problem?
Yeah, there is kind of a, you get caught in a like a vicious cycle where you go into prison, you get out, and you have little or nothing when you come out, and your possibility of finding meaningful employment is pretty slim. Then you have a hard time finding housing and all that. So a lot of people do resort to crime as a source of income, and they do end up back in prison again.
Now, there's been some criticism saying if you take all these prisoners and put them together, all these criminals, they're going to learn to be better criminals, or they're going to learn criminal behavior because they're not in the community, they're not on work release. And again, sometimes when we see documentaries of, say, the prisons in the Netherlands, it's these people are working regularly, and they kind of an honor system. They go and report at night to an environment that doesn't really look like an American prison. What happened to that huge movement? I think it was about a decade or two. We're going to build all these work release facilities, and you would have jobs and you would just kind of report at night or on the weekends. What happened to that movement?
Well, the prison system itself, especially here in Ohio, has actually moved into the what they call community corrections, which means that the same mindset that we have in prisons actually came out here to the community. So a lot of our community-based correction facility are ran in a manner that you would run a prison in.
So they're just like the state pen, even up to maximum security. So these community-based, low-key, let's keep you in the real world and just punish you on a weekend or maybe at a certain time at night that has fallen by the wayside, and we're running these things like prisons?
Well, a lot of people have heard about a treatment in lieu of conviction, which mm-hmm. is supposed to be, you're not supposed to get convicted, and it's supposed to just be like treatment. Well, in some of the counties, like Delaware County, I don't know what their failure rate is right now, but several years ago it was 97% there was their failure rate. And what it was is that their treatment was so harsh, and you had to report They had day reporting. You had to report to your probation officer. You had to go to drug counseling. And you had to pay for all this stuff. It was so harsh that not very many people actually successfully finished the treatment. So that's the mindset that we're talking about. It's actually stepping stones to the prison system and not really an alternative.
And this was in Delaware County. That's interesting. I actually had a case, in this case, a first-degree misdemeanor, but it involved time and a person on probation after a few months in jail for a few more months. And I found it to be quite odd. The person, part of the condition of his probation, this person was black in Delaware County, other people white, but he had to get a job, so he gets a job. He gets fired on a Friday. He then goes and tries to talk to his probation officer to let him know he's fired. The probation officer, shockingly, is out golfing on this Friday, even though theoretically it's at a time period when he's supposed to be
in the office.
Working. Yes. And then, so this guy goes and gets another job, goes out and applies for a job, gets another job. On Monday, they come and arrest him for failure to report his loss of job, even though he's got a new job. And I remember going to court in Delaware on his behalf saying, that he attempted to report. Because he did report on Monday, your parole officer wasn't in. And then I remember the judge calling me forward and saying, well, congratulations, your guy got a job, but the only thing your guy can do to keep himself from going back to jail is to apologize to the parole officer in open court. So it was as part of this public humiliation where even though my guy said, I didn't do anything wrong, I shouldn't have been arrested, it cost me the job I just got, he had to stand up and publicly apologize to the parole officer, who, by the way, had been a athlete in Delaware County and in their high school system. And I just thought that was odd, a really odd mindset, that you would make it so difficult for someone to keep a job and not reward them for finding a new job.
No, there's actually a lot of things, not just the employment, but if for any reason you move, you change your address or you move in the middle of the night, like it might be some domestic squabble going on where the police ask you to leave the house to end the dispute so there's no more verbal arguing or whatever. And guys have done that. They have left to try to comply and to bring peace to the situation. Well, actually, that's in violation of their parole or the post-release control, because you can't move without giving them prior notice. So if you've gone back to, let's say, a family member's house or something like that, just overnight or for the weekend, then you're in violation of your controls, supervision.
So it's fairly easy to violate parole?
Oh, yeah. Real easy.
What would be some other examples of how you would inadvertently violate parole?
Associating with anyone with a criminal record, which is a lot of people, actually.
And in the prison industrial complex. But how would you know? I mean, do you have to knowingly do it?
There's kind of like catch-22s, because they might actually require you to go to AA and NA meetings, which is going to have a lot of people there with criminal records, so that would be a violation in itself. Going to any kind of meetings with organizations that have, ex-felons there would be a violation.
So if there was a reform group to help felons and you went to that First Amendment protected group to advocate for reformed felons, you might be violating your parole because there might be some former felons there.
Yeah, I went through that exact same thing in 99, and I was the first one to get a waiver, statewide waiver. Anyone that came when I was running at Prisoner Advocacy Network of Ohio, anyone that wanted to associate with, it was called Pan Ohio, could do so without fear of being violated. But it was kind of a bizarre rule, and it was pretty it applied to anything, you know, anywhere you might associate any group or organization.
I'm sort of a little curious, as the publisher of the Free Press, Columbus Free Press, occasionally when we used to send the Free Presses to prison, when we came out monthly, they would say it was contraband and confiscate it. I think there was nothing in the paper that would cause it to be contraband. How does that work in prison? Who makes those decisions where, I mean, one prison says that's fine to read that magazine, another prison you get it sent back saying, you know, refuse to deliver, or somebody's arrested and put in the hole for having a copy of the Columbus Free Press?
Every prison has their own screening committee, which if they find something...
Who's on the screening committee? Prisoners?
No, prisoners. No, they would be guards and supervisors. You might find some social workers on there, but not likely. Maybe administrators, but usually guards. Guards that work in the mail room and somebody that's had experience dealing with the rules and regulations in the prison.
And what are the rules and regulations? They never seem to be quite clear.
Like, well,
whatever somebody on the screening committee doesn't like?
Pretty much. They would say it was inflammatory. And anything which challenges the way people think, our government, that would be inflammatory. Anything that would require free thought and maybe resistance to some corruption in government or something, that would definitely be inflammatory and probably be banned from the prison.
So if we at the Free Press wrote and said, look, George Voinovich's brother, Pauly Voinovich, is illegally getting contracts to build prisons and halfway houses and jail, and it's nepotism, something like that might be inflammatory?
Oh, yeah, that'd be banned for sure. That'd be banned.
So let's, in the last remaining few minutes, go over what's going to happen. Are you speaking on the 7th? What can people expect, the listeners, if they show up to this rally? And where is the kickoff point?
It'd be right at the corner of Broad and High. And there'll be a speaker from the Lucasville Uprising Freedom Network. And there'll be... you'll be there speaking. I'll be speaking.
I will indeed.
And we'll probably have open mic, too, for a while for other groups and organizations that are co-sponsoring. And we'll be...
And who is the sponsor of the main sponsor of this rally?
It's Central Ohio Prison Advocates.
Central COPA. Ohio Prison Advocate, that's the group you're with?
Right. It's called COPA. Yes. And we meet... once a month, here at
1021 East Broad Street.
Right. At
usually, I believe
4:30.
Yeah, second Saturday, is it not?
Second Saturday every month.
Second Saturday, and is there any way people can get information about that organization? Any websites? Anyone to contact?
Yes, we've got a website. You can go to Central Ohio Prison Advocate website. And it usually lists the meetings and the times and all that.
And what is the group really trying to accomplish?
Educating the public and trying to put pressure on legislators to change some of the laws. And making people aware of what's going on in prison as well as out here in the community in relation to the prison system.
And we got a chance, listeners, to meet Dan Cahill, talk to him, hear him speak, hear myself speak this April 7th. And again, the time?
1 to 3.
At the corner of Broad and High?
That's right, downtown. And we'll be marching down West Broad to the Department of Ohio, Department of Rehabilitation and Corrections.
You got some old friends there?
Not at that office, I don't.
So the lookout goes, that Dan Cahill. All right, we're done here. Check out thefreepress.org. This is Bob Fitrakis bringing you the other side of the news. Thanks, Dan.
Thank you. I appreciate it, Bob. Thanks for having me.